Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today. We're going to play on and stand strong with Drolo and Dibs. Turn the game on. Pump up the volume. It's time to play ball. Drolo and Dibs.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome to the championship rounds of Drolo and Dibs here on 95.7 The Game. Buckle up, it's going to be a big hour. Sam Amick, our NBA insider from The Athletic, in a little over 5 minutes at 9:10. Matt Barrows to break down the 49ers schedule and what's the latest from Santa Clara as to the thought process regarding the number two overall pick in the draft 1 week from today. He's going to join us at 9:35. And at 9:45, the latest installment of Bet 162, I'm letting a listener make the pick today. I'm not even bothering with it. So one lucky listener will call in. You can make the pick. One, two, or three units. Giants, Nationals, over, under, whatever. Just do it. Can't be any worse than what I have done so far. Warriors laying 8.5 tonight against Clippers. Game 3, tip time, 6:30 p.m. right here on 95.7 The Game. All Warriors playoff coverage on 95.7 The Game. Presented by Great Clips, proud partner of the Golden State Warriors. All right. Steve Kerr, Kevin Durant met with the media yesterday. Some very interesting thoughts as to how the approach should be for tonight. Here's Steve Kerr on Kevin Durant.
Look, the guy's the most skilled basketball player on planet Earth. There's nobody who can do what he can do. It's the playoffs. Defenses are more locked in. They play everybody tougher. I don't know how many shots he got the other night, 7, 8. Yeah, I mean, yeah, absolutely he needs to be more aggressive. It's playoffs, and he can get any shot he wants anytime. So I want to see him get 20 shots, 30.
Does he need to be more aggressive? They've looked pretty good outside of a 31-point collapse. Based on the way he's been playing, I've laid out the numbers before. I'll lay them out again in a little bit. But do you see him needing to get more aggressive tonight?
Yeah, without a doubt, Kevin Durant needs to be more aggressive, and he will get more aggressive. Now, in aggressive, we had Pop on, and he talked about what aggressive means. It doesn't mean necessarily shooting 30, 40 shots. It means being more aggressive, running, getting to your point, and the understanding where he's going to be at on the floor, and the ball movement will carry you there and not just going and setting up there because then they're going to butt front you. And then, so if you don't do that, if you move around without the ball to get to a point, now beat guys there, and now the jump shot can come back in. You can still elevate and keep moving the ball around. That's what he's talking about. Papa's talking about being more aggressive, and Steve Kerr talking about being more aggressive. Definitely he will be more aggressive tonight.
You see it as well?
Yes, more aggressive in the post, more aggressive early in the shot clock before the double team can get to you, because you know they're going to sag off Draymond, they're going to sag off Bogut,
yep,
off Looney if those guys are on the floor. So you know the help is going to go over to KD. Get the ball down in the low block when Beverly's on you. You're 9 to 10 inches taller than him. Just turn and go ahead and score. Don't worry about distributing and making sure the ball moves. When you've got a mismatch and you've got Beverly down in the post, take advantage. Turn and shoot. You know you're the best mid-range shooter in the game. You got to be more aggressive, in my opinion, not only passing but also trying to take advantage.
All right, so
house in the house.
So Steve Kerr met with the media and talked about how he wants Kevin Durant to be more aggressive, 20, maybe even 30 shots. The media then went to Kevin Durant and relayed this message. Here's what KD had to say.
I'm not going to go out there and just go shoot 20 or 30 shots. You know, I don't play like that. So, I mean, we were up 30 points. So I had 5 shots. Everybody's shots were kind of evenly distributed around that time. We were up 30. So me taking 2 more shots after that wasn't a reason why we lost.
Fair point.
Yeah.
There's a fair point there, because if you go inside the numbers with this,
yeah,
Beverly has guarded Durant on 85 possessions through 2 games. In those 85 possessions, Durant has taken just 13 shots. He's had 6 turnovers as well. This is what people are focusing on, what Patrick Beverley's doing to Kevin Durant. Now, if you normalize that over 100 possessions, That averages out to 15.3 field goal attempts per game. For the regular season, Durant was averaging about 27 field goal attempts per game per 100 possessions. So that is a significant drop. You would think a significant drop in field goal attempts from Kevin Durant could lead to a significant drop in scoring. Unfortunately, for the haters, that's not the case. When guarded by Patrick Beverley, the Warriors are averaging 122 points per 100 possessions. If they did that during the regular season, they would be the number one team in the NBA in that category by a mile. 122 points per 100 possessions. When any other Clipper is guarding Kevin Durant, they're averaging 111 points per 100 possessions. A drop of 11 points. That is a significant decline. He's taking less shots with Beverley guarding him, yet the Warriors are scoring more points, and somehow people are upset. He's a lightning rod. I think because he's so talented and because the shot totals are so low, people would like to see more, but I don't believe the low shot totals are leading to the issues that we saw at the end of game two. That was a lack of defense. That was a lack of coaching. That was a lack of playing. Literally everyone is responsible for that failure. Every single player, every single coach, no matter who you are responsible for that failure. The key is, do you bounce back tonight? If he gets his looks, he probably takes them. But I don't know if he goes out and drops 40 tonight.
No, I don't know if he does that. Is he capable? Without a doubt he is. The guy's capable of dropping 50, 60. It doesn't matter. But does he need to do that to win? Joe, you just went through the numbers. Absolutely nothing. He doesn't. Steph had 37 the first game that they played, and they won by 17, double digits. They covered and everything else. The last game, they're up freaking by 31 freaking points. They've went to sleep and fell asleep at the wheel. These two games have been domination by the Warriors. In the Warriors, you saw the turnovers, 9, 6, 7 turnovers by KD. You saw right before halftime, you have a chance to go up by 16. Instead, you let the ball get stolen. You're Steph. You're coming a little lackadaisical. You're coming up and got the court, looking for that thing in that last shot before half. They steal it, go the other way, and score two. That swings right there. So when you look at what they did to allow the Clippers to hang around and creep back in the game, just bad by the team.
He's our NBA insider from The Athletic. Sam Amick is joining us here on 95.7 The Game. Sam, as always, we appreciate your time. I think a lot of people were surprised by what took place during the second half of Game 2 just a few nights ago at Oracle Arena. But now that we've got that out of the bag and the series is 1-1 heading to L.A., do you give the Clippers a legitimate shot to win this series?
Morning, guys. I mean, if I'm being honest, probably not. I mean, I know, listen, their spirit the other night, what they pulled off, it was incredible. And they've had just the kind of year that nobody saw coming, especially after they traded Tobias Harris. And maybe I'll be wrong, but first of all, I don't necessarily view the Clippers version of Staples Center as any sort of, insurmountable home court advantage. My time there, it's gotten better, but it's not quite the same as going into Boston or something like that. And so the Warriors should not have any problem in that regard. And then, we've seen with this Warriors team, they can be so Jekyll and Hyde, but when they get smacked around like they did the other night and embarrassed, they respond. And then once they respond, I think then, then it becomes the question of, because they know how long this playoff marathon is and they've been through it so many times, that then I do anticipate that they will finish the job, because they cannot afford to put any extra miles on these tires as they try to pull off this three-peat. And maybe the Clippers will prove me wrong. I mean, I can't say enough good things about what they've done, but the talent gap and the fact that the Warriors still, all things considered, all the drama of the entire season, they still had a pretty damn good year, and I think we're going to see that team going forward.
Is the talent gap lessened when you turn to that second unit, not just because Montrezl Harrell and Lou Williams have been so great, 22 of 31 in game two, but the Warriors bench doesn't have that same punch, and maybe it's exacerbated now by the lack of Boogie Cousins?
No, that's fair, 100%. I mean, for one, it's pretty wild that all of a sudden, I couldn't believe they picked up Andrew Bogut to begin with. I never saw that happening, and now that signing is obviously so pivotal, considering the lack of front court depth. But you're dead on. I mean, that's the whole thing with their second unit. They got two guys that play all-star caliber basketball coming off the bench. Lou Williams going to be sixth man of the year again, I would anticipate. Montrez was in that conversation as well. I've heard some people advocating for, certainly, the Warriors starting five has done pretty well so far in this series, but I like the way they're rolling it out. I mean, I just don't think, I mean, the other night was so incredible just because you never thought they would get back in that thing to begin with, and then you certainly never thought they'd actually get it over the finish line. But now that the Warriors are alert, awake, you know they cannot sleep on this team at all. I mean, I think the second unit is how the Clippers get it done, but it's probably not going to be enough.
If you're the Dubs, especially particularly with the second unit, how do you match up with Monte and Lou Williams? What are some of the things the Warriors can do to kind of, I would say, slow those two guys down?
Well, I mean, it's funny with, you know, Klay Thompson spent a ton of time, you know, even though you're talking bench units, Lou Williams still ends up spending a lot of time, you know, with the Warriors starters.
Sure.
Klay did, I thought, a reasonable job, you know, just chasing him around. It sounds weird because Klay's a guy that is, you know, possibly going to be on one of these defensive All-NBA teams and with good reason. But, you know, I think you've got to do something to completely jam up Lou Williams. I don't know if you send another body at him. I don't know if you mix up the coverages and maybe have Klay split that duty with somebody else to throw Lou off a little bit more than they have even so far. But you got to do that, and then it's easier said than done. You've got to find a way to slow down that pick and roll with Montrez. But that's their bread and butter, and that's been their best weapon all year long. So it's, you know, there's a little bit of, you know, good luck doing that. I think the reality for the Warriors is on the offensive side of the ball, if they can just get right again and they can kind of meet in the middle on this debate between Kevin Durant and Steve Kerr about, you know, what sort of style they want him to play with. Is he going to be KD unleashed shooting 30 times a game, or is he going to be the Magic Johnson version of KD, you know, looking over Pat Beverly and finding people? They got to get on the same page in that regard. I think offensively, if the Warriors find their way again, then, you know, that's how they're going to get past this team.
Our NBA insider from The Athletic, Sam Amick, joining us here on 95.7 The Game. The Rockets have been absolutely smashing on the Utah Jazz through the first two games of that series. Based on the way the Rockets closed the season, the way Harden's playing, and the way they've opened the playoffs, do you think this is a better Houston team this year versus last year?
Yeah, Joe, I think I do. I don't know if I have recency bias, but you know, if you just break down the data and you go back to, it's basically mid-December when the Rockets got right. They start 11-14. They, you know, we all know the narrative where they lose last summer. They lose Trevor Ariza, Luke Mbamute, and it just, you didn't really understand how they were going to fill those kind of key role player gaps and absences and find a new thing, and they have. I mean, Kenneth Faried, Austin Rivers, you know, Daniel House, guys like that, guys who we just did not see coming, have been great. And James Harden, man, I tell you what, I did end up voting for him for MVP. It was very tight between he and Giannis. I'm watching him last night against Utah. I mean, that man, you just can't stop him. And I mean, you know, Joe Ingles trying to get up in his business, trying to karate chop him in the throat, that doesn't do it. Step backs, you know, right in his face. What he's doing, you know, Chris Paul, we never thought we'd say this, but he's a high-level role player now, but that's not even a, you know, I'm not throwing shade at him. That's what they need. He's defending on one end and then, you know, doing what James needs him to do as his kind of co-star on the other end on the offensive side. So I think they're better, and I do think we're getting ahead of ourselves. The Warriors got to get past the Clippers first, certainly, but I'm watching that game last night like everybody else thinking, man, the Warriors are, they better be ready because this Houston team is completely in lockstep.
And as Houston sits back tonight and watches the Warriors in anticipation of what could be to come, do they sense a new vulnerability in Golden State? And is this something that Houston looks at, particularly after game two, and thinks now more than ever, we've got a chance to vanquish the champ?
Yeah, I would think so. This is a fun time of year when it comes to all of us being, you know, armchair sports psychologists, because only the Rockets know how they see it. But, I mean, it sure feels that way, guys. It feels like you got all these different narratives going on. You got Chris Paul. I keep thinking about this. You know, he's so tight with LeBron James. And you see LeBron dealing with injuries that you could probably safely say have a little bit of, you know, a relation to age and father time and all those things. Chris Paul's running out of time. He's got to go get that championship that has evaded him for so long. And so that's where his head is at. James Harden, you know, going back to the 14-15 season, when, you know, the Warriors win it all and Steph's the MVP and James thought he should have been the MVP. Like, James has thought that he's been better than the Warriors, you know, best players individually and then trying to be better than them collectively ever since then. This is a story that, you know, has been going on for quite a while now. And it does feel like the Rockets are, you know, in a great place, and the Warriors, you know, at their best, we know what they can do. But then they just, the locker room stuff seems to kind of find its way onto the floor, or, you know, whatever the reasons might be, and they get sideways again. And that's where I think the vulnerability is.
Sam, recently you sat down with the logo and Jerry West and had a conversation. What were some of the intriguing things about that conversation that you looked at and said, wow, that's pretty fascinating, that I think the listeners would love to hear?
Well, Lo, the funny thing about calling Jerry, it sounds corny, but it's honestly become one of my favorite parts of the job. You know, you call him every once in a while. I'm a sucker for Jerry largely because he's a sucker for sports writers and for the media. He likes talking shop, go around the league. And you don't necessarily pull that card all that often where you say, hey, you know, how do you feel about jumping on the record, which sure. He doesn't do that often. And so, but with the Clippers doing what they did the other night, with the Lakers news, with Magic Johnson stepping down, it felt like a good time to connect with him. And, you know, the highlights for me were, for one, his perspective on Magic stepping down was fascinating, where he said he had not talked to Magic, but he said, you know, when you see somebody of that stature do something like that, there's got to be reasons. And you know, it tell you what, there has been some noise, or at least questions around the league about whether or not Jeannie Buss might pick the phone up and try to steal Jerry away from the Clippers and bring him back to the Lakers. I was told that has not happened. She's not making that attempt, and the Clippers don't want to lose him. But, you know, as it pertains to this series, it was just the idea that he is a guy with a lot of pride, and who I guarantee you, in terms of just his competitiveness, he probably prefers that the Lakers would have tried to take him away from the Warriors a couple of years ago, and they didn't do that. Instead, it was the Clippers. And so because of that, you know, he's trying to kind of send that message that it's his group and his team that are going to end up winning L.A., you know, and not the purple and gold. But now this matchup with the Warriors is personal in a different way. You know, Johnny West, his son, has been with the Warriors for 7 years. Fun little personal dynamic. And, you know, and he still talks in high regard about Steve Kerr and the group. But, you know how he is. He wants to go out and shock the world and take the Warriors down.
Our NBA insider from The Athletic, the great Sam Amick, joining us here on 95.7 The Game. As always, we appreciate the time, Sam. Thank you very much.
You got it. Thanks, guys.
We have the announcement for tonight's officials, if we could get a drum roll. Jason Phillips, Scott Twardowski, and Scott Foster. Scott Foster will be officiating tonight's Game 3 between the Warriors and the Clippers. What's that mean?
That means technical fouls will be in the offing. I put the over-under for the Warriors' technicals at 1.5 now. And
you think
they'll
get at least
over.
Two techs?
Yeah, as a team, for sure. Draymond hasn't gotten a tech in quite some time. KD's probably itching to get into a little set two with Patrick Beverley. Steve Kerr rushing out to defend somebody. Heck, if DeMarcus Cousins does make the trip with his bum quad, he's good for a tech every now and again from the bench. I'm going over 1.5 techs, Joe.
Broken clipboards, half, over under on that.
Yeah, I'm going to go over on the broken clipboard, too.
One of the great videos of all time, the slow motion of Kerr punching through the clipboard. Punching it with such force, just this pop jab, it just shatters. Awesome. Awesome punch.
Kerr's got some pop. Kerr's got some pop with that punch.
What do you think about the idea, Amick telling us he voted for Harden for MVP? I think it's such a great race this year between he and Giannis. I really don't think you knock anyone for the pick. If you're going with Giannis, I can see it. If you go with Harden, I can see it, right? It's two great basketball players who have had two tremendous seasons. But the idea of him going with Harden, you agree?
I don't agree, but obviously he knows more about the association than probably all four of us combined as far as how many games he goes to, how much he sees.
Lo feels the game, though. Lo can feel the game.
That's a good point. I should have accounted for that when I disparaged all four of us.
Five senses.
Yeah, smell being the most primary one of them for Lo. I think that when you look at this situation,
that could be deemed by some
that he's coming around.
No, as a shot at you. Right. As a shot at you. Because you can't see it, and you can't hear it, you can't really feel it. But anyway, I digest, as we like to say. The big argument for James Harden being MVP is what he did to Houston after they had that slow start. Well, to me, that's more of a knock on James Harden because he shouldn't have been in that position in the first place. James Harden played all year, so when they came out of the gate and they struggled, that's on James Harden's resume as well. Milwaukee had the best record in the association. Giannis was the most dominant player start to finish. To me, he's the MVP.
they cannot. Oh, actually, I didn't get your thoughts on this. Do you agree? Do you like Harden? Do you agree with Sam Amick, or do you think it should be Giannis, or do you have someone else in mind?
No, I disagree. I think that it should be Giannis. I'm with Dibs on that. Now, I do believe even when James Harden this year he was hurt and missed the stretch there, the team played better. Guys start shooting balls. We talked about that on the show as well. So, yeah, James Harden, he's a talent. We understand that. Step back daddy, he's at his prime. He's at his best. It's his finest hour. But I think that if you look at Giannis and they have the best record in the association, you got to give it to Giannis. You do.
Houston has drastically changed their style of play for those who haven't been watching. Their pace last year used to be near the top of the NBA. Pace is a metric that gives you a number of the average amount of possessions you have per game. So the higher your number, the more times you possess the ball in a game. The working theory, more possessions leads to more shots leads to more points. Houston used to be up at the top, right near the top. All of a sudden, now they're near the bottom, right? Their pace, in terms of the amount of possessions they have per game, has dropped dramatically. But here's the kicker. The scoring is still up. They're still scoring as much, if not more. Their pace has dwindled, which means they have become extraordinarily efficient at what they do with the possessions they have. Not as wasteful as they used to be. So the version of the Rockets, the Warriors might have waiting for them in the next round, I'm trying to figure out who's better. I really am, in terms of this Rockets team this year versus last year, because we were all led to believe that this team couldn't be better. But the way they're playing is quite impressive, and they are straight boating. They are taking the Jazz out to the Great Salt Lake and boating them all around it, just boating them into the salt. And they can't even float to the bottom because there's so much salt. It keeps you on the top. Very buoyant, like the Dead Sea. So that's the problem for the Jazz right now. They can't even sink and just die. They have to sit up there and float and keep getting boated for two more games. Quick aside, is there anything more pointless in professional sports than the bullpen running out to the mound when there's a fight 20 minutes late? They keep showing this highlight. This is apparently the number one story in baseball. Tim Anderson, TA7 for the Chicago White Sox, pimps a home run yesterday. The Royals retaliate, of course, because so disrespectful that a guy show any sort of emotion in baseball. So they plunk him. And then TA kind of stares at the pitcher, and it's that whole thing. And everyone comes out to break it up. And 20 minutes goes by, and both bullpens empty from the outfield, and they all come jogging out. What are they going to do if they get there? No one ever gets there and throws a punch. No one does anything. What's it with this camaraderie?
Exchange pleasantries. They should just let the pitcher and the batter straight duke it out. Like in hockey, when two guys are going to fight, they give each other the look. Oh, you want to go? Let's go. They drop the gloves and those two duke it out. Nobody else runs in and puts their skate in someone's throat or hits somebody with a stick.
Jeez. Wow.
You don't see that.
Jeez.
Man
OJ.
To man.
Thank you. You just went
Let's go man to man. Let's go straight up, head to head, let them duke it out.
Like they don't even, you know they don't want to fight because half of them are still wearing their jackets and they're just jogging in and then they get there and it's like, hey guys, we're better than it. Come on. It's like, what are you doing?
If you don't
get back to the bullpen, make a play or stay on your butt.
And the guy, it's just that unwritten rule. You come out. If you don't, guys get fined. Oh, he wasn't in there. They've watched the tape. Oh, he didn't come out.
Offensive that you didn't come running in to defend your boy.
Right. They got all that stuff that guys do.
I'm waiting for the guy to pull a hammy. It's baseball. Someone's going to pull a quad running, jogging from the bullpen to some non-fight.
Well, Michael Morse got concussed in a non-fight. He got smoked by the Shark.
That's on old Jeff. He was doing more than eating innings that day. He's knocking people out. Whatever. All right. Matt Barrows on the Niners schedule. What's he thinking? He knows this team as well as anybody. Does he think they can get to the playoffs? Joe Lo Dibs, 95.7 The Game.
It's game day on 95.7 The Game. Steiny and Guru preview game 3 with former Warrior Matt Barnes at 11. Papa and Vontae talk to our boots on the ground, John Dickinson at 2:30. And don't miss Warriors Clippers game 3. Coverage starts with Warriors Live at 6. Tip off at 7:30. On the Bay Area's number one sports station, 95.7 The Game. Joe Lo and Dibs continues on 95.7 The Game.
Joe Shout out our good friends at Fremont Bank. Full service banking, no compromises. You see, I was supposed to read that as we were going into Anna's update and then into the commercial. But I just hit the button and just sent it to break for no reason whatsoever. Yeah, that's 15. That's an aggressive one, too. That's not a simple offsides. So just wanted to make sure the friends at Fremont Bank, no full service banking, no compromise. They knew how much we loved them here, now, and forever. Barrow's on the phone. Let's put him through. He covers the San Francisco 49ers for The Athletic. Matt Barrow's joining us here on 95.7 The Game. Matt, good morning and thank you for your time. Let's start with the release of the schedule. Given all the permutations that could have taken place for the Niners, how do you feel this version of the schedule shakes down for the team this year?
So-so. I mean, every fan thinks that the NFL schedule maker hates their team.
Very true.
And, I'm sure there are some 49ers fans who feel that way as well. It could have been better. I know that the 49ers were hoping that Washington and Baltimore are something like 45, 50 miles apart. And there was a hope that those games could be back-to-back, for example, so that that would relieve the team of one cross-country trip. They're not. So there are four games in the Eastern time zone, and the 49ers have to go across the country, probably for all of them. The exception might be the very beginning of the season. They start out at Tampa Bay, of course. That's a late afternoon game there. It starts at 4:25 local time in Tampa. So let's say that game ends at 8 or so that night. They get on the plane maybe 10:30. So there's a possibility that instead of going back to the Bay Area, they could instead go to Ohio, where the York family is from, and practice there for a week right up until their game in week two against Cincinnati. So there might be some ways to trim some miles off of the schedule, but a lot of trips to the East Coast, a lot of back-to-back trips. That's what kind of struck me. Most of the time when they've got a road game, it's followed the next week by another road game. They go to Baltimore, for example, on December 1, and then the following week they have to go to New Orleans. So that's pretty hard to take, especially when you're coming from California for some of these trips.
And an extremely early bye, Matt, with the bye week coming in week 4. How does this alter the preparation and the way you look at a season as a team? Because you're going to have 3 games, then a bye. Then you're going to have 13 straight ball games.
That's true. Both their Monday night games are preceded by a bye and then a Thursday night game. So the flip side of that is that they get a little bit of warm-up before their showcase on national television. That week 4 bye jumps out to me for a couple reasons. The first, as you noted, they don't get that mid-season, late-season rest that they could really use. The second is that they're dealing with some guys who are coming off of ACL issues, Quan Alexander being one, Jerick McKinnon being another. It looks like a pretty good spot to start bringing those guys back. Maybe they begin the season on PUP and then are activated sometime at the end of that first month of the season, and they come back. The bye gives them a little bit of extra time to get ready and get rolling before the regular season. McKinnon, to me, is interesting. They've got so many running backs that they might be able to afford keeping him on an inactive list, like PUP, for example, during the early part of the season, and then allow him to come back, and maybe that corresponds with some nicks and bruises at that position.
Matt, when you look at the team today, if you were going to put a number on them, a win or lost right now, and then if you looked at them, what would they could possibly look back after the draft? How significant of an increase or how better can they get after the draft compared to now?
Well, I think the defense obviously has the biggest chance to make a leap. And a couple of guys talked about this yesterday, DeForest Buckner and Joe Staley, just how good D Ford's addition makes the defensive line. You know, DeForest Buckner was saying it creates all sorts of space for him on the inside. So if you multiply that by two, if they were to take Nick Bosa, for example, you would think that there would be a sort of a corresponding leap as well. You've got two really good edge rushers. But we're talking about a team that won four games last year. So even if there is a nice bounce that they get out of the draft, you know, how many games are we talking about? So I don't know. To me, I hate to weasel out, but you know, it just seems like an 8, 7, and 9 type of season ahead for the 49ers.
Matt Barrows from The Athletic with us here on 95.7 The Game. Any sense as to which way the team may be leaning with that number 2 overall pick? Let's assume Kyler Murray goes 1 to Arizona. Nick Bosa has been a very popular choice, but we can't escape the name Quinnen Williams. I know Lowe likes him.
Loves the kid.
Papa likes him. It seems like every former player I come across tells me how great Quinnen Williams is. How much in play is he at number 2?
Yeah, it seems to be growing. I think he's in play. The question is how much. I mean, Nick Bosa is just a better fit as far as what they need, considering, you know, how many interior defensive linemen they've taken. So you take Quinnen Williams, and you're saying that he's so good that it's worth, you know, basically saying that Solomon Thomas has no definite role. Kentavious Street, another guy that they were high on, where does he play? Where does Eric Armstead play on pass rushing downs? Where does Julian Taylor play? They've got a lot of guys at that position. So it has to be a very concrete conclusion that Quinnen Williams, the guy who's basically started 1 year in college, is so good that he's worth kind of eclipsing all of those other guys. That's what gives me pause about it. Having said that, you know, the thought of pairing him next to DeForest Buckner is really tempting. You know, he could essentially play nose tackle, which he's done at Alabama on that loaded Alabama team. He was forced to play nose tackle, even though that wasn't his natural position, and he adapted to it. But his best spot would be as the 3 technique, which is DeForest Buckner's spot. So do you take a guy at number 2, knowing that you already have a star player at the very best position that he plays? That's why I'm a little bit hesitant to jump on the Quinnen Williams bandwagon, although I do recognize that bandwagon has been growing.
It's been growing and growing, especially when you see how they were unable to generate any turnovers on the back end and how much a pass rush might help that. Are you getting the sense that the Niners are looking to maybe shop some of these players, Eric Armstead, Solomon Thomas, or are they just going to be stuck with them regardless?
Well, I mean, if they did go after Quinnen Williams, I think it would be a lot like last year when they drafted Mike McGlinchey. They already had a good tackle in Trent Brown, and they immediately traded him. So they would definitely look for trade partners if that were the case. The question is, you know, who's gonna leap for Eric Armstead with 1 year left on his deal, which is a $9 million deal. And so you end up having to eat that $9 million salary if you're the team that trades for him, and then lo and behold, he becomes a free agent the next year. You know, Solomon Thomas, I mean, what are you going to give up for Solomon Thomas, who does have 2 years left on his rookie contract and the possibility of a third? But I don't know what the 49ers would get in return for him. He just hasn't delivered on the field. I think it would be tough to trade those guys. I don't know about Kentavious Street. I don't know about Julian Taylor, how much they would get in return for them. So I don't know what kind of market they would get for some of those, that glut of interior defensive linemen that they have.
From a coaching and schematic point of view of this team, what work in this team offensively and defensively, just game-wise? What are some of the concerns that you had last year and going into this year?
Well, I mean, the secondary produced exactly 2 interceptions. I don't think we've given that number enough recognition. That is a absurdly low amount of interceptions in a 16-game season. The previous high had been the previous low, NFL low, had been 3, which came in a year in which they only played 9 games because of a strike. So that's got to be number one, just the ability to create turnovers. And, yeah, the pass rush is a big part of that. Cornerback and safety are another big part of it. I still don't understand why they didn't go more heavily after free safeties in free agency. There were some good ones available, and all they did was re-sign injury-plagued Jimmy Ward to a one-year deal. That was the only move that they made at that position. I guess Antoine Exum as well, who's a good safety net, but certainly not a long-term starter at that spot. So, you know, that would be something that they should look at. I don't know who they would get in the middle rounds who could make an immediate impact, but that would be the range, I think, that you would start looking at that position in the draft, those middle rounds, second, third, fourth round.
He covers the 49ers for The Athletic. Matt Barrow's with us here on 95.7 The Game. Matt, we always appreciate the insights. Thanks so much for jumping on this morning.
All right. Thanks, guys, for having me on.
All right. So, whatever. I can't win a bet in this Giants thing. This bet 162. Yesterday, made three straight. Went with the under 8.5. In hindsight, terrible decision with Samardzija on the mound. Serving up Italian meatball after Italian meatball for national batters to feast upon as they launched them out of the park repeatedly in the first inning. So, on the season, that is now three consecutive losses, five losses in six. Five in my last six, and 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, and 9 in my last 11. So really, really cooking with gas, as we say right now. I'm so fed up with this, so early. I'm taking a pick from you today, all right? And if you get it right, you can name my next child. So wow. The number is 888-957-9570. Totally random. No contest, no trivia line, no anything. Call up. We're going to pick someone randomly off the phones. You will make the selection.
And if they win the bet, if you have another kid, they can name your kid Mailbox or Fire Hydrant or
sure
Bumper. Lorenzo.
Wow. Those are the first three things you go with are Mailbox, Fire Hydrant, and Bumper.
Bumper Fortenbaugh? I think that's got a nice ring to it.
Not, no one, Lorenzo's at least a name. Lorenzo's an actual name.
Thanks, Joe.
Mailbox.
Oh, yeah. Someone's going to volunteer to name your kid and try and think of the most heartfelt and gee whiz name they could possibly give you, Joe.
But Mailbox?
Well, Gwyneth Paltrow named her kid Apple.
Yeah.
So,
and how's she doing? She's got
a pretty good little empire going.
Well, the kid's name is still Apple, and that's not going to play real well. Although, that's the thing celebrities do. I'm not a celebrity, but if you want to name the kid
Mailbox
sure. Now, Lorenzo might not be too creative.
It's a weak name.
It's a name.
It's a lame name.
Bumper.
Name,
do you know any Lorenzo's? Bumper.
888-957-9570.
Bumper. Dinner time.
There are two things you're going to need to do. You're going to need to pick the amount, which is one unit, two units, or three units. And you're going to need to give me the bet, whether it's Giants or Nationals or Giants run line or Nationals run line or over, under. It's up to you. We're going to pick someone at random. We're going to let it marinate for a bit. Give us a call, 888-957-9570. And if you want, I'm not going to pick it, but you can always let us know on the Chilton Auto Body text line at 95795. As we let the calls come in to create a nice pool of randomness, did anyone see the Raiders schedule?
Wow.
Like, the NFL straight up does not like you, Raiders. And that's important to note because Barrow said it perfectly. The schedule comes out, and every year the fan base thinks the NFL's out to get them. And everyone's pretty much full of crap. You know the teams you're going to get. It really just comes down to the spots. The Raiders, the NFL really does not like you, Raiders. And that's important to note here because they have made sure that you have no chance of doing anything this year. Now, you're going to open with two home games. The Broncos, as the second half of the Monday night doubleheader to open the season, and the Chiefs. Maybe you go 1-1 in there. You're probably not beating the Chiefs, very good team, but maybe you do. Who knows?
Both games on dirt, by the way. So there's FU number one.
Yes, go ahead. Because
last year they only had one dirt game. This year they're going to have two dirt games pending a possible A's postseason run.
So right off the top, you've got the two dirt games.
Dirt.
Then you are going to embark upon a six-week stretch where you don't play a single home game. You're going to go six NFL weeks without a home game. You will be at the Vikings, at the Colts, in London against the Bears, on the bye, at the Packers, at the Texans. Six consecutive weeks of an NFL season without a home game. You will play a home game on September 15th the next time. Now listen to this. I want you to really listen to this. You're going to play a home game on September 15th. The next time the Coliseum hosts a game will be November 3rd. You will go
Shut
from September 15th
Shut
to November 3rd. 3rd between your home games. And, oh, by the way, you are a Pacific Coast team that is playing 7 1 o'clock starts this year. And that's 1 o'clock Eastern.
Wow.
7 games with the early start time. I've never in my life seen anything like this.
I'm shocked.
And just to be clear, they didn't want you to play your final game ever in Oakland in the last week. In fact, the final game ever in Oakland will be against the Jaguars in week 15. Your last two are back on the road. And oh, by the way, while you're hosting the Jaguars, the Niners have a game they're hosting as well. Both local teams will be playing that weekend. So if the Raiders are thinking about some big-time send-off in the Bay Area, you're going to have to share the moment with the Niners, who will have a game as well.
Well, you had your big-time send-off last year where everyone got emotional for the Pittsburgh game, and you boated the Steelers, and then now you're coming back for another season. So I've never seen this, Joe. 49 days between home dates. You got to go to Europe and play a game. 5 straight away from home, plus the bye week. This is ferocious.
It's so ferocious that even when it rained, when the great flood came with Noah, it rained for 40 days and 49. You're talking about 49 days. That's unreal.
It's an extra 9 days of rain, Coach. You really brought that home.
Not sure how any of that applies here. We're really just talking 40. About a length of time. Just two things of length of time.
But Noah sustained 40 days of rain,
right.
And they got to sustain 49
right.
days, Coach. Do you understand 9 more days of rain?
Basically, God loved Noah more, the world more, than the NFL loves the Raiders.
I guess one way to slice it. I guess that is. I'm not going to fight it. How about that? I'm not going to fight
the
analogy. All right, look, I'm not picking the individual. I'm not picking the individual. I want nothing to do with this. So get in my ear and let me know the name and the location so that I can welcome the person to the show who is making today's pick for Bet162. Turn your microphone on.
Yes, please.
Reza in San Francisco.
Reza in San Francisco. Okay, Reza in San Francisco, welcome to the program. Honestly, just nice and loose. Easy swing, however you want to do it. It can't be worse than me. So what do you got?
What is the line on the Giants game tonight?
The game is this afternoon. This is already a disaster. The game is this afternoon, and if it's the just straight up, it's the Nationals -195, Giants +175.
And the over-under?
The over-under is 7.5.
No. I will go under National.
Under
he
Nationals?
You
were just going with one. Are you going for the under or are you going with the Nationals?
I will go National and the game to go under.
All right. Get him off. Get him off the phone. Literally has no idea what's going on. It is one, everyone knows the rules. One bet, everybody knows
the
rules.
He's playing parlays, Coach.
There is no parlay. There is no parlay. You know what? You're all out. I'm going back to the pick. Everyone's out. You had a chance to name my child, and you still couldn't get it done.
Mailbox, time for dinner.
Forget the Giants. It's Corbin -1.5. What the hell is the price on this?
It's got to be what? -120.
I hope they get blown out.
Reza, we
blown
love you.
Out.
No. Call back.
Reza's with Pat Burrell, lifetime ban. Reza's with Pat Burrell, lifetime ban. Corbin is +105. Dibs, if you want to confirm.
Oh, I can
plus
see
plus 105,
Coach.
-1.5. It's a 3-unit play. Max wager. Corbin in the Nationals, -1.5 over the Giants. Eggs, shoes, beat it. Incredible.
That worked out great for us.
Incredible. No, it worked out terrible because it put me back in the seat. I'm going to swing and miss again. I want to put it out to the people. You got to bring it harder than that.
Game time coming up here in about 12 minutes, Coach.
Parlays.
You can lock in. You can lock in on, I guess they're your Nationals today. So you have the Nationals.
I'm not watching. I'm done watching.
You get the Nationals given a run and a half, and
yeah,
you're
so
riding with
works.
Corbin.
1-0 Corbin through 4. 1-0 Corbin through 5. 5-1 Giants as they get to Corbin because whoever's managing the Nationals these days, who is it? Is it still Dusty Baker?
Is it Manny
Doesn't
Acton?
Matter. Gonna leave him in too long. Pilar hits a grand slam. I can see that coming. And then the Nationals will rally late to make it 5-4. Bases loaded, one out. Whoever comes in will get, Melanson will come in, get into a jam, but eventually find his way out. Heart's broken.
Knowing your luck, it'll be Nationals winning 6-5, not covering the 1.5.
1-0.
Yeah.
Corbin will pitch a no-hitter. He will throw a perfect game today, and he will get one hit. It will be a solo home run, and that will be it. It'll be 1-0. I'll lose. I will bet on a team that has a perfect game, and I will lose. I wonder if that's – I could probably do that. That's probably happened before.
If anyone can, it'd be you the way you're running right now.
Yeah. I'm going to get a perfect game and lose the bet.
You're hot on the wrong side.
Man, you've lost 9 of 11.
That's what they call cold. Hot on the wrong side, also known as cold. This guy.
It's called. It's
called sorry, Chucklehead. We're all out of time. Steiny and the Guru are next. Matt Barnes is going to join them at 11 o'clock. That's brought to you by Fremont Bank. Full service banking. No compromises. We're done. We're out of here. For Dibs, for Anna, for Lowe, I'm Joe. Whatever. See you tomorrow at 6 a.m. right here on 95.7 The Game.
Warriors. Clippers. Game 3.
Right down Broadway for a dunk.
Tonight at 7:30. Coverage starts at 6.
Ridiculous.
Only on 95.7. The Game.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.